Hey guys, you've heard of the Young Turks podcast because you're listening to it right now. But make sure that you subscribe and give it a 5-star rating if you like it. Thank you for listening.
Drop it. All right, power panel. Mark Thompson, John Iadarola. I'm Cenk Uygur. What's up, guys? How you doing?
How's it going?
Very strong week. Big week.
Big, strong
flawless week. For the president, just as good as he could have hoped for.
He had a perfect week. Perfect week. He had a week surrounded by other weeks, other big weeks. Well, you're gonna hear from the idiot in chief in a second. So, God, he's unbelievable. Okay, you get it. But later in the program, to look, every story is amazing. But Sacha Baron Cohen goes after Facebook, Google, and the others in the harshest imaginable language. I mean, he came in super hot and super strong. And I love the guy. It's going to be an interesting conversation about is he right, is he not, how right is he, etc. So I love that story. And then Indiana University with a difficult situation. Ava, a professor, clearly over the top, racist, sexist, anti-LGBT. What do you do with him? He's got tenure. So it's fascinating. So lots and lots of amazing stories today. But we do start with the idiot in chief, not John, Donald Trump.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, he's ostensibly joining Fox and Friends to prove how innocent he is. We want to just quickly summarize what his appearance was like, as you'll see.
I do want always corruption. I say that to anybody.
So that's Trump on Fox and Friends. I don't think that's what he meant to say. But he was calling into his favorite show, and because he likes it, it's the most powerful news show on the planet, Fox and Friends. Nobody saw that coming years ago. But anyway, he joined them for, I believe it was a 53-minute interview.
Oh God.
During which he never stopped to breathe even once. But he's talking about the hearing, and they will get into some of the people that testified. But first off, what is the part of this story that Donald Trump remains most interested in? I'll show you right here.
The server, right, from the DNC, Democratic National Committee.
Who has the server? Now,
the FBI went in and they told him, get out of here. You're not kidding. We're not giving it to you. They gave the server to CrowdStrike or whatever it's called, which is a company owned by a very wealthy Ukrainian. And I still want to see that server. You know, the FBI has never gotten that server. That's a big part of this whole thing. Why did they give it to a Ukrainian company?
Are you sure they gave it to Ukraine?
Well, that's what the word is. And that's what I asked actually in my phone call, if you know.
So I guess we've gotten used to a lot in the past few years. But that interaction right there, what Trump said and then the media, like his favorite state media response to him, should be a time for reflection on the part of all Americans, how far we've fallen, that the president was just spreading conspiracy theories that when pressed by Steve Doocy, who he's not gonna go any harder against the president than, you sure that they did that, president? Trump's response was, that's the word. And what does he mean? He means that he saw it on, you know, on Breitbart or on InfoWars or, like, it doesn't deserve any more respect than that. The president is spreading obviously false, many times debunked conspiracy theories on live television, and his favorite show isn't gonna push back any harder than, you sure about that?
But you know, I do wanna be fair to Fox and Friends. Why? No one will know. Can figure out. But seriously, like, they, Doocy and Kilmeade had faces on, like, it felt like, no, what are you doing? No,
Doocy shifted in his chair at one point, uncomfortably.
So when you have gone to a level of stupidity where you've made Doocy and Kilmeade uncomfortable, you're in a whole different level. They look at Kilmeade like, I don't know about that. I don't think that's right. Please stop saying that. please stop saying that. Making us really uncomfortable. Okay. But my two favorite parts, CrowdStrike or whatever it's called. Wait a minute. You're being impeached over this. Okay, and you have this insane theory that no one else believes in, and you're putting it out on national TV, but you don't know what it's called. Like, his carelessness is astounding. Mm-hmm. Like, if you bother to come up with a conspiracy theory that is mental, and you're the president of the United States, and you're gonna say it on national TV, have a firmer grasp of what you're claiming it's called. Okay, unreal. And then they're like, are you sure about that? And he goes, well, that's what the word is. What the word from who? The yeah. word from who? You have at your access thousands of intelligence officials, yeah. and they're at your command. They serve at the pleasure of the president. You'd be like, hey, you know what? Can you tell me whatever that thing is called? And they'll tell you. Right? Hey, can you tell me if the Ukrainians have it? And they'll tell you. And if you say to them, hey, where'd you get that information? They'll tell you. Instead of, I don't know, that's what the word is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in command of some of the most powerful investigative bodies on the planet. He can certainly run down this story. But he's desperate, of course, to serve up something that's related to Ukraine, right? And so that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to warm up whatever old conspiracy theory he might be able to tie to this Ukrainian incident. And remember, this is right on the heels of the Fiona Hill testimony, which warned specifically about this kind of thing, about coming mm-hmm. forward with these ridiculous theories that that fly in the face of fact, but are swallowed by a lot of people.
Yeah, and just to be really clear, in case you're not familiar with the theory, but also the truth, CrowdStrike is not a Ukrainian company, it's a California company. The DNC didn't have a server that like you can pick up and hold and like give to someone. They had dozens and dozens of servers, some of them physical servers in a location, some of them a cloud-based storage that they were using. All of the information from those was provided to the FBI, so he's just lying about them. Like, the FBI busted in and like a guy grabbed the server and jumped out a window because he didn't want the CIA. It's just, it's all made up.
No.
It would be like if I said, like, the internet's a series of tubes, and I've heard that the tube got clogged, and who clogged it? We're gonna find out. It's just such a ridiculous old person view of how tech works. How are you supposed to respond to that? There's no, he just lied in so many different ways.
First of all, John, please, not old person, boomer.
Okay, tech boomer. Okay. Yes.
Okay, so there's so many things on that next level, right? It's on the cloud, but there are clouds in Ukraine, perfect clouds, big clouds surrounded by other clouds. It's in the cloud. How could it be in Ukraine? But there's no way he knows what the cloud is, let alone where mm-hmm. it might be and its relationship to Ukraine. But guys, to John's point, and this is the most important one, we have a president of the United States who is clearly mentally unbalanced. I mean, he goes on national TV and says, oh, this Ukrainian company, it's based in Sunnyvale, California. I mean, all you have to do is ask anyone or a Google search or anything, but no homework, wild, insane lies, brazenly, it's a Ukrainian based company. It's in Sunnyvale, yeah. right? So, I mean, okay, fine. I mean, again, I sometimes Anna gets mad at me if I address Republicans, but how you doing? You feeling proud? Are you tired of winning yet?
Yeah.
But what I would say this, Cenk, I don't know if this kind of thing, and this is a great example of the sort of thing Cenk's talking about where he's making up facts, is an example of him being imbalanced as much as it is how effective any narrative he throws out there with confidence and I take it your other point, which is that even the Fox and Friends people are like, yeah. Even though you're saying with confidence, come on, Mr. President, we know it's not true. But there is a part of his audience that just is taking in whatever he's yeah. saying. And so they also don't do the homework, is what I'm saying. So I don't know how much of it is, certainly it's intellectual laziness and not knowing the facts, but I don't know how much of it is a mental imbalance and how much of it is just, hey, I'm going to slam the hell out of this and there are a bunch of people that are going to believe
yeah.
it.
Yeah, they're just going to believe. There's going to be no pushback. I mean, like, can you imagine, Cenk, like, let's say in a couple of years, we're doing the show and Bernie's embroiled. He's president, he's embroiled in a controversy, he might be impeached, and he calls up the Young Turks and rants for 45 minutes straight. And we're just like glancing at each other like, what is he talking? Oh, it's conspiracy theories. Like, but yeah, good job, Bernie. We still support. We would never have to do that. But they're perfectly, like, they're a little bit uncomfortable. They're shifting and everything, but they're not going to not support him based on that. What a sad, low position they've been forced into.
So I remember when Bernie was on in 2016, and at one small window of time, and it happened to be when he was on the show, he was saying that the superdelegates should switch and vote for him, and that was. At that point, one of the few chances he had left, because it was really late in the process. And I said to him, now that's not really principled, is it? Because that you had been saying the superdelegates shouldn't even count, mm-hmm. right? And he's like, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but he was like, ah, that's true. Okay. So he was good enough to admit that. But we challenge even progressives that we really like, mm-hmm. right? Let alone if Bernie were to come on and say, you know, the Young Turks that are based in Ukraine. No, wait, we're based right here, right? Mm-hmm. No, of course we wouldn't let people lie like that. That's nuts.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the best they could do on state TV was, are you sure?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, look.
But their fans finished that segment believing that what Trump said was true.
And that's my point.
You know. No, I got you guys, but I don't think it's a strategy as much as he's just pathological.
Yeah.
He can't help himself.
Well, actually, why don't we get to some more pathological lies? Because you mentioned it's weird that he doesn't know CrowdStrike when that's a part of the theory that he's pushing. That's not the only thing in this process he's not very familiar with. Turns out some of the main people testifying, he doesn't really know them either.
First of all, Volker, I don't know him. Don't know him. This guy, Sondland, hardly know him. I've had a couple of conversations with him. I see him hanging around, you know, when I go to Europe. But he was really the European Union ambassador. And all of a sudden, he's working on this. And, you know, ask about that.
Oh, God, the body language. I know you couldn't see, maybe you can put it back up. But Kilmeade is like gripping his hand awkwardly. And you can see his eyes are like going around in circles. Like, he's yeah. like give it a second. He starts to look up in. He's not looking at the camera.
Yeah, yeah, he's so uncomfortable.
In circles. Yeah, he doesn't know anyone. And it's Fudi Giuliani, my lawyer. I don't know. I have a lot of lawyers. I'm not really familiar with him. This guy, Mike Pence, is like a vice president. No, I'm president. That can't be right.
Yeah, Al Roker was part of it. I don't know anything about it. Yeah, it was a bizarre run through. Sort of surface take on everything. But what I love is always the last thing, which is, you know, once somebody who's his butt buddy, who's a Sondland, has his number, they've exchanged a number of texts and personal conversations. As soon as he becomes part of the problem, barely know the guy, seen him a couple times, hanging around, you know.
Hanging around. Okay, so first of all, we keep going past things that every other president would have been derided for and they would have talked about for a year straight. So you don't know anyone in your administration?
Yeah.
I mean, he just comes out as bragging about like, my ambassador to the European Union, barely know the guy. I've seen him hanging around, I don't know what he does. He's your ambassador to the European Union. It's kind of a relevant position, right? Volker, never met him, don't know anyone in my government. All I do is talk to Hannity. And then tweeted out. So then on Sondland, we've gone over this a million times. Sondland gave Trump $1 million. Now, if there's one thing Trump knows, it's people who give him $1 million. Okay. So that was for his inauguration. It wasn't to his pocket, but you know, and he's a fellow hotelier. Yeah. And so he knows Sondland.
Yeah.
And we know through witnesses who testified, he was on the phone with Sondland. And the witness said, he asked Sondland, hey, did the Ukrainians do the investigation? So the idea that he's like, Sondland, you know that he knows folks like Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman who were recently arrested. Those are Rudy Giuliani's goons. And he's like, I might have had a picture with them. I don't know them, but I might have had a picture with them. That means he knows them super well. And we found out later, yeah, he was having dinner with them. Okay, pathological.
Yeah.
So have at it if that's your guy.
Yeah. Now, Trump does appear to know Marie Yovanovitch, but what he knows is not necessarily positive. He has a particular grudge with her, and it has to do with interior decorating. Let's listen.
This ambassador that, you know, everybody says is so wonderful, she wouldn't hang my picture in the embassy, okay? She's in charge of the embassy. She wouldn't hang it. It took like a year and a half or 2 years for her to get the picture up. She said bad things about me. She wouldn't defend me. And I have the right to change an ambassador. And Rudy didn't say good things, but he wasn't crazy about it. You know, he wasn't like a major topic. But I have the right to change. This was an Obama person. Didn't want to hang my picture in the embassy. It's standard is you put the president of the United States picture in an embassy. This was not an angel, this woman, okay? And there are a lot of things that she did that I didn't like. And we will talk about that at some time.
Okay. Okay.
But I just want to let you know, this was not a baby that we're dealing with.
There was
The way he uses baby and dog in his metaphors, I can never really follow. Quick note, him saying we'll talk about that at some point is always a clue that he will never return to this topic again, ever. You'll never find out about it. Though things will be coming out soon, never comes out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, he has a huge issue with her.
To be fair, his investigators are still in Hawaii.
They're gonna find that birth certificate. Yeah. But yeah, so she wouldn't hang the picture. And here's the thing. My immediate knee-jerk thing to respond would be, yeah, that's a little bit weird. It's hardly a reason to dismiss an ambassador, even if you're allowed to. But I have a feeling that in a week, a small story will come out that no one will focus on, that the picture was up from day one. And he was just told that it wasn't, and he's always focused on that, probably.
Yeah, okay. What kind of a dictatorial move is it? Not an angel, didn't hang my picture. Literally the only damning evidence he had on an ambassador. Not an angel. Look, you're supposed to, I guess, hang the president's picture. Fine, no problem, okay? But if I was in a situation like that, the idea that I would get mad at someone because they didn't hang my picture, would you? Is that would you be like, oh, she's not a baby, she's not an angel, she wouldn't hang my picture? That's your best evidence against her? I mean, look, what planet are we on? I mean, can you imagine if Obama fired an ambassador for not hanging his picture? Now, in this case, of course, it's not true that's why he actually fired her. He fired her because she was fighting corruption in Ukraine. But the fact that he thought it was a smart excuse to go on national TV and say, on the other hand, right? And remember, of course, he is obsessed with his own pictures. That's why Trump charity he used proceeds from the charity to buy his own portrait two different times. He was cited for that and had to pay a giant fine.
Yep.
Okay, because he's obsessed with his own picture, because he also is clearly narcissistic.
Yep.
He has several deep psychological problems. But I want to get to the most relevant part, guys. So the guy's a lunatic, we get it, right? But if you notice there, he said, Rudy, I talked to him, but he wasn't a major factor. Wait. Why did he mention Rudy, and why is he even talking about that? You know why? Because one of the things that Rudy Giuliani is now being investigated about by Trump's Justice Department, by the way, is that he worked with Parnas and Fruman to get Yovanovitch fired, and that they did that because a foreign government wanted them to do that.
Yeah.
Now that's. Parnas and Fruman have already been arrested, and Giuliani might be arrested. So it's a huge deal if the real reason that Yovanovitch was fired is that Rudy, who is Trump's personal lawyer, is getting paid by a foreign government or a foreign actor to get our ambassadors fired. That would be a massive scandal on top of all the other scandals, and we're in the middle of it. But he thinks he's dismissing it, going, Rudy wasn't a big factor. You just admitted he was a factor. Big or small, you admitted he talked to you,
yeah.
You knew that Rudy wanted her fired, you just said it on national TV. He can't stop admitting crimes on TV.
Well, and the basic law of Trump opposites, which is that of course he did whatever he says he didn't do, and he didn't do whatever he says he did do, that applies here with Giuliani, right? And Giuliani had a big role, and just to put a button on the picture thing, that's how Giuliani, and it's a genius way to do it, got Trump so anti Yovanovitch because he mentioned the picture thing. That is a way to light a fire under Trump.
Yeah.
Because that says it all. Stop right there. She's been fighting putting my picture up in the embassy. Get rid of her. She's an Obama holdover.
Yeah.
And so on. So there's a lot going on there. And yes, I think all roads lead to Giuliani. And it is a huge scandal. I mean, it may be lost in all the other scandals, but it's a big one coming.
Yeah, I think both Giuliani and Barr need to be tied more closely to this, but we'll see if they actually have to testify. Yeah, the picture thing, I think from an outside perspective, seems really shallow and ridiculous, but it would be very effective against Trump. And for him to cite it on Fox News, I think for his audience, it will be very effective. Because like we've said many times, there's nothing more important than loyalty to the leader. And her not putting up that picture, it's all about symbols with the right. They love to say that they don't like identity politics and all that, but they love their symbols of loyalty to the strong man. And so I think there's nothing worse she could have done than refuse to put that picture up.
But let me disagree with you guys a little bit about the big picture. Like, I know we always go back to his base holds. And I've seen some a new polling about head-to-head matchups with Democrats. And he's actually, and I have to confess, I thought he'd be way lower than he is right now in head-to-head matchups, and he's not. He's winning in some of the states. So I'll you know, own up to that. But let's see how it goes. But my sense of it now is this is a different level. I think he's slip sliding away. I think that when they started challenging the military, and being so enormously detached from what people can see with their own eyes on television. It's a different thing, oh, somebody wrote a 400-page report. Ain't nobody reading that report. So Trump can come out and say, oh, it was about how I rode on a unicorn to save Mars. And they'd be like, of course it was, he said it, right?
Sounds cool.
But when there's people on television going, okay, this is what happened, and all the Republicans come out and say the opposite, people start to go, look guys, and it's in the polling too. 70% believe he did do it on Ukraine.
Yeah.
And 51% think that we're also skating by like giant in numbers. Like if any other president had a number that was 51% think he should be impeached and removed from office, like everybody would be packing bags. It'd be over, right? And but here we are. Yes, so far the Republican politicians are holding.
Yeah.
But I think he's even going to start to lose some of his base. This is really bad and well, really detached from reality.
The last thing I would say quickly on that, Cenk, is that on this, they will try, I suspect, to spin this as Rudy going rogue, and and they'll try to keep the stink off of Trump on this. That would be the spin I would anticipate anyway.
Yeah. And according to a report, it was from him, so maybe he's lying, but Giuliani yesterday on Glenn Beck's show said he's still talking to Ukrainian politicians about getting this investigation going.
That's right,
he said he's still doing it.
Yeah,
so anyway, we have two more videos that we really should get to. In this next one, he has a little bit to say about Adam Schiff, and take a look at what he stops himself from saying.
Well, there's only one person I want more than Where's Hunter, and that is Adam Schiff. I want to put that guy with his way.
What's your first question for Adam Schiff?
I almost said something that might have been slightly controversial.
Yes.
I didn't just say I'm learning. See that, Steve? I'm learning. But after all these years, I finally learned. But look.
So they all start smiling and laughing when he says, with Adam Schiff, I want to put that guy with his way. And then he stops himself from saying that something that even he acknowledges would be what, offensive or threatening, or what does he mean by that? I want to put that guy by his way, that makes them all awkwardly smile when he stops himself from continuing.
Oh, I thought you guys had the answer. I couldn't decipher it.
No, I literally didn't know what he meant.
Yeah.
I mean, I would tell you if
to
I
to me
I knew.
it sounded threatening. I want to put that guy, I'm not gonna say it.
Yeah, I want to put that guy away. I want to.
Oh, I see. You think put that guy away? Is that
put that guy underground? I don't know. He stopped himself. So, I guess kudos for the only restraint he's ever shown in his entire life.
And no, Steve Doocy to say, I'm sorry, we're gonna have to stop. What exactly were you gonna do to Adam Schiff, one of the guys investigating you in this impeachment hearing? We don't know.
But he sounds, as many people have pointed out accurately, he sounds like a mob boss. The guy I want to get even more is Adam Schiff. I'll tell you what I want to do to him. Oh, we're on TV.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're the president?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so there's one last video. This does not have to do with the impeachment hearing, but it's just an idea of when he gets going, it's very much like his rallies. He goes from topic to topic, he says crazy things. Here's an example.
Things, you can break through. We have the wall is electrified so that if anyone touches it, we know exactly what's happening. We can get there within minutes. Now we built
the wall.
We're building a fantastic wall, and without the wall now.
I don't know what he's talking about.
That was the best. That was now, pretty strong.
In the middle of the clip, I swear to God, I turned to John and was like, is it electrified?
It's not electrified.
No, Kilmeade did the same thing you did. You electrified the wall?
You electrified it? And Ducey at one point says, sure.
It's not electrified.
Because they know they're talking to a crazy person. What is he talking about? Oh. The whole thing, if you press it, it contacts the hive mind and they know where you are. Is that a weird way of saying that there's drones or there's surveillance or there's cameras? Is he speaking metaphorically? Is he becoming a poet? I don't know what that means.
Oh. John, the hive mind is in Ukraine. They won't let the FBI get it. And if I ever get my hands on them or Adam Schiff, wait. I'm not gonna say it.
I don't know what that is. Anyway, there's other stuff. We're not, that's enough.
It's enough.
Can't take anymore.
And well, you gotta give him credit. He is electric.
Yeah. You electrified the wall? You electrified the wall? Oh my God.
I mean, look at how much we're laughing at the president of the United States. How unbelievably, mortifyingly embarrassing.
Yeah.
And to me, what will always be more embarrassing, and later people will pretend that they didn't support Trump, but that 30% of this country would get all the way up to 45. We never really got much past 45. But I'll forgive the 15% that were like, I don't know, there's a good economy and I never pay attention to the news, right?
Right.
But 30% of the country thought that this madman was a great leader.
Yeah.
Later they'll deny it when he's in a mental institution. But the guy, we can all see it. We're seeing it right now as it's happening. You can come back to this video, as apparently people like to do, and see. No, they knew at the time. They clearly knew at the time the guy had completely lost his mind.
Yeah. First break?
Yes.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Be right back.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the show. I thought I was supposed to do that. But anyway, I want to let you know that not only do we have the rest of this show, it'd be weird at this point to just cut it off. We usually do the full 2 hours. But we also have some shows next week, but for Thursday and Friday, because it's the holiday, we have something special lined up for you. So we have a series of Thanksgiving specials. Some are like special content, some are highlights of things that we've done throughout the year that we've put together for you. In addition, that's on Thursday and Friday. For our members, we put together something even more special. That will be available Thanksgiving morning on TYT.com under the special coverage. Sign up to become a member at TYT.com/join. You'll find out what that is Thursday, Thanksgiving morning.
Okay, I got comments for you guys. True North remembers. Hey, is that you?
That is. I barely remember at this point.
Check that out. Yes. Trump also has the right to remain silent. Maybe he should make use of that more often.
Yeah.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Peter Jill says Trump thinks that the truth is what he thinks is true. That's all there is. I think that that's probably right.
Yeah.
Gabby Morita says, what really saddens me is that there will probably be schools named after Trump.
Oh.
There are elementary schools named after Richard Nixon, so I wouldn't put it past some place in the South to name one after this thin-skinned man baby. That would be the most ironic school ever. In the school, would they only have to show pictures? You don't have to read past the page. You only have to
no assigned reading.
Yeah, yeah. No books at all.
Yeah.
And every essay has to be 280 characters. Not any longer. Sees the meme says, Jesus, Trump was phone yelling so loudly in the Fox and Friends interview that I had to turn down the volume on my phone. Of course, and he continued, of course, aides could hear him through Sondland's phone.
Yeah.
So that's a good point.
Yeah.
Nick is America's fastest hippie, writes in on Twitter. Young Turk started watching show on Pluto while I was in the hospital on my phone, going to become a member. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
That's awesome.
TYT.com/join, home of progressives.
And you'll get access to that special Thanksgiving morning content.
That's exactly right. And John's show, Damage Report.
Exactly.
Okay, real quick, YouTube Super Chats. The Sick Rose says, I'm burning up. We're going to get to Bernie in a second. Dramatic news there, very good news. Charcoal Knee writes in, I was so happy to hear Bernie say what happened in Bolivia was a coup. USA needs to address its past and ensure that it will no longer interfere. By the way, if you haven't seen Ryan Grimm's hard-hitting interviews in the Spin Room, showing me up, doing better journalism than I do. Okay, anyway, check that out.
I hear he didn't put your picture up.
Could you imagine? Grimm, I don't know about him. He wouldn't put my portrait up and then showing me up by doing better reporting. Anyway, TYT.com/join, become a member, you can get it. You could also probably see those interviews on YouTube. And last one, Adriana Castle say, hey Turks, who do you think would be a good VP pick for Bernie? I'm thinking Ro Khanna.
Ooh.
Ooh, wow. Interesting.
I don't think it'd be Ro Khanna. Mm-hmm. I like Ro, but I don't think it'd be Ro Khanna.
I have thoughts, but I'll say.
Yeah, I mean,
later.
A lot of people say Nina Turner. I think that's a pretty good idea.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Nina Turner. Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Why don't we jump into some good news? You know, profile some legislation that could actually help people out. Representative Ilhan Omar has released details of her new green housing plan. Here she is announcing some of her approach.
One of the first things I noticed when I came to the United States were people sleeping on the side of the streets. And I have been on a mission ever since to make sure that there are no humans left in that situation. Today, I'm excited to introduce the Homes for All Act, which will fulfill the promise of a homes guarantee by building 12 million new public housing and private permanently affordable rental units. Fastly expanding the available affordable housing stock, driving down costs throughout the market, and creating a new vision of what public housing looks like in the United States of America. We will prohibit any discrimination against residents based on sexual orientation, gender, and criminal history or immigration status. The bill also creates a new anti-displacement fund with HUD in order to protect families from gentrification, prevent displacement, and stabilize neighborhoods. And it makes public housing a mandatory part of our budget, like Social Security and Medicare. All of this will be built to the highest environmental standards, making this a key part of the Green New Deal.
And I'm glad that she focused on that. This is considered to be a public housing component of the Green New Deal. Residences, real estate does contribute quite a bit to our overall warming.
So I want to talk about the scope of the problem. There are now more US households that rent than at any point since 1965. So obviously part of the problem is housing costs too much. And it's not just in the big cities, in rural areas as well. There's now a growing homelessness problem in South Dakota. So we desperately need more housing in this country, and she's trying to do it in a way that is both ambitious, but also realistic and environmentally conscious. So it hits a lot of birds with one stone. But this is the stat that really stunned me. A renter working 40 hours a week and earning the federal minimum wage can afford a two-bedroom apartment in how many counties across the nation? So you're getting the federal minimum wage, just a two-bedroom apartment. I mean, you're not gonna be able to get it in New York or San Francisco, that's obvious, right? So how many counties can you get a two-bedroom apartment in that situation working 40 hours a week? Zero. Not a single county in the country. The federal minimum wage is $7.25. It's a little over $15,000 a year. You cannot afford a two-bedroom apartment anywhere in the country. That's amazing. So what progressives are doing, and I love that they're going in this direction, is pointing out the real problems of Americans and trying to fix them. That is what your representatives are supposed to do. So meanwhile, the Republicans are like, I don't know, another tax cut for the rich? I'm not kidding. Donald Trump, in one of his last-ditch proposals, kept talking before the impeachment began. He's like, another tax cut for the rich? And that tax cut that he was contemplating would have actually given a higher percentage of the money to the rich than even the last $2 trillion tax cut.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Whereas this actually helps real people. So the only thing that they ever have in these scenarios is they're like, oh, I don't know how we're going to pay for that. How we tax us for the rich? No problem. Can't pay for it anytime. Oh, you want to help real Americans and create 12 million homes? How are we going to pay for that? Mm-hmm. So that's all they got. So this would actually help real Americans.
No, that's a great point. The last thing you said is also so true, which is all they got is the tax cut for the rich, and it'll trickle down to those people who need housing and all the other things that are now becoming so elusive in America. This Green New Deal, I get into these tug of wars with people over it all the time, but I just think it's full of goals and ideals that have to be reflected in the future. Otherwise, there is no future. I love everything that's wrapped in this, including the environmental side.
Yeah.
So it really should be pointed out one other part of the bill. It repeals the Faircloth Amendment. It was passed in 1999. If you were wondering what that is, don't worry. Not a lot of people know about it. What it did was it stopped funding public housing. So they cut off funding of building new housing. But on top of that, they severely limited what we could spend to upkeep that housing. So now all that public housing has been in great decline because we can't spend any money to just do simple repairs and do upkeep, etc. And then the Republicans turn around and go, look at public housing. You see, it's in decrepit shape. Yeah, that's because you cut off the funding.
Yeah.
So this would restore that so that it would give the current public funding a fair chance to make situations there a lot more livable. And again, since it helps poorer Americans, the Republicans have no interest in it at all. But by the way, it's not just Republicans. As HuffPost points out, centrist Democrats, of course, also opposed to this plan. Mm-hmm. Because it wouldn't help their donors at all.
Yep.
These people in public housing don't donate to them ever. So they're like, why would we support that?
Yeah.
I also think that Cenk's point about the public housing situation and losing funding is an important one for the general thing they do. I mean, you really find it a lot. They defund federal programs and then point to what a failure they are. This is a real move that you find on the right and among the GOP. And as Cenk says, even frankly under some moderate Democrat leadership, that can lead to the privatization and even the elimination of a lot of federal programs. Yeah.
And I just want to say one final thing, and it's I want to focus on the first thing that Representative Omar said in that video. We've grown accustomed to so much in this country, and compared to the experience of people who live in places like Norway and other parts of Europe, she grew up in Somalia. It's a war-torn region. They had to go to refugee camps, and then finally they get the chance to emigrate to the US. And the first thing she notices, a child who's been through all of that hell, is there's a lot of people sleeping on the side of the streets in America, the richest country in the history of the world.
Yeah, I thought it was powerful. I mean, the sense I got was she was basically saying, America gave me a home, and now it's my turn to return the favor. And that's super powerful. Yeah. And that's what's the best of America.
Okay, we do have to take our second break, but when we come back, Sacha Baron Cohen with a really powerful speech goes on the offensive against people like Mark Zuckerberg after that.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment. All right, back on TYT, time for just 2 comments. This was fun. Jay Rocks writes in, hey, Mark Thompson, I walked into a room and swear I heard you on TV. So I hit rewind and there you were, buddy, in Day After Tomorrow as news report on climate change. So cool.
Yes,
I didn't know that.
Yes, some of my best work. Thank you very much.
But I love that.
That's cool.
TYT viewers can recognize your voice on voice alone. They're like, "That's Mark Thompson." That rewind.
Cool. Mm. Okay, thanks, man.
That's awesome. And then Danny asks a tantalizing question: who should be Senate leader and House Speaker in 2020 if Bernie wins? Drums. So I don't know that he gets to decide that, but it's an interesting question for another time.
Yeah, and all the conversation I hear online is, what will Speaker Pelosi do under the next president? I thought, wait, why is it a foregone conclusion that she would continue to be the speaker? It just is, I guess, but why would that be? Seems a little weird. It's democracy, you can have an election. Anyway, let's move on to our next story. Listen to what Sacha Baron Cohen had to say about some of the negative impacts of social media and the way dishonest political actors have been using it.
Today, around the world, demagogues appeal to our worst instincts. Conspiracy theories once confined to the fringe are going mainstream. It's as if the age of reason, the era of evidential argument, is ending. And now knowledge is increasingly delegitimized and scientific consensus is dismissed. Democracy, which depends on shared truths, is in retreat, and autocracy, which depends on shared lies, is on the march. Hate crimes are surging, as are murderous attacks on religious and ethnic minorities. Now, what do all these dangerous trends have in common? I'm just a comedian and an actor, I'm not a scholar, but one thing is pretty clear to me. All this hate and violence is being facilitated by a handful of internet companies that amount to the greatest propaganda machine in history.
I've liked his work for a long time, but going into that speech, which I watched in its entirety, and you totally should, we've got a little bit more. I was very impressed with his analysis of the intersection of a number of different problems. And he's very much right there. In a little bit, we're gonna show you, he goes directly after Mark Zuckerberg, but you already have a basic idea of what he thinks about Facebook, Twitter, and all of that.
Okay, first of all, I gotta say, respect. He seems to really understand technology. Okay, old school Ali G references. But anyways, no, I love the guy, love him. Not only is he super smart, which, you know, if you've ever seen him speak on this issue or any other issue, you would know, but also deeply compassionate. He gave $1 million to make sure that refugees were taken care of, Muslim refugees were taken care of. And so the speech here is, speaking at an event called Never Is Now for the Anti-Defamation League. So this guy is phenomenal. Now, his indictment of those platforms is a really interesting conversation we'll get into in a little bit. But so far, unquestionably interesting, brilliant analysis that is worthy of serious debate.
Yeah, we can say more as we get into it, but clearly he's identified the problem. At this juncture in this conversation, he's identified what is clearly correct, which is that there's a tremendous amount of propaganda being generated on these platforms.
Yeah, and like I said, he goes directly after Mark Zuckerberg, so why don't we turn to that now?
Let's think about it. Facebook, YouTube, and Google, Twitter, and others, they reach billions of people. The algorithms these platforms depend on deliberately amplify the type of content that keeps users engaged, Stories that appeal to our baser instincts and that trigger outrage and fear. It's why YouTube recommended videos by the conspiracist Alex Jones billions of times. It's why fake news outperforms real news, because studies show that lies spread faster than truth. And it's no surprise that the greatest propaganda machine in history has spread the oldest conspiracy theory in history, the lie that Jews are somehow dangerous.
And he returns to that topic several times. We'll get to the Zuckerberg in just a minute, but again, just very consistently good analysis.
So off the air, before we got to that story, we happened to be talking about that same thing, and I literally called it the oldest conspiracy theory during the break.
Yeah.
Because Glenn Beck had done a segment where he had George Soros, and he literally called him puppet master and had him pulling the strings. Oldest stereotype in world history, right? So deeply, deeply anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
And so that stuff is being spread around. And so, and
that was yesterday, by the way. That wasn't, I mean, not that it would be okay in 2007 or something, but that wasn't like back in his heyday. He's still doing that. That was the program where the president's personal lawyer joined him.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, so I can't believe that anybody would work there. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. So now, in terms of their responsibility, well, that's so interesting, because I'm afraid that if you just watch that part, it makes it seem like Facebook and Google, etc., favor lies or favor conspiracy theories. No, what they're doing, and I'm trying to be fair, and by the way, I have a conflict I should tell you guys about. YouTube, Facebook are our biggest partners, okay? So I want to be clear about that. But what they're doing is they're serving up what people want, whatever they watch longer and what they're more attracted to. So in a sense, there are real problems with the algorithm. Ramesh Srinivasan, who's on the show all the time, talks about it. He wrote a book called Beyond the Valley, and that there's some of the cultural assumptions of the people who create the algorithm that affects culture throughout the world. It's a really interesting critique of those platforms. On the other hand, what the algorithm is basically doing is serving as a mirror and saying, here, I'll give you what you like. And so part of the problem is humanity. And I think we have to be cognizant of that. It's not like, I don't want people to get the wrong impression. In my opinion, there aren't people at Facebook and Google going like, let's put something really evil in here. They're not like Glenn Beck, where they're like, okay, put in a thing in the algorithm. If they find it, they'll know that the Jews are the puppet master, right? No, there's no plan like that. It's just that the algorithm rewards what people are passionate about. And sometimes that's fantastic, and sometimes it's terrible.
But the algorithm does take you to some of the most toxic stuff out there. And he does go on. I watched the entire thing as well. I really recommend it, as John says. It's really worth a watch, not long. He explains that. He explains that the way it's set up, even if it's just raw algorithmic laboratory stuff, it takes you to some of the most toxic philosophies that are on any platform.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I agree with you that I don't think that they've purposefully put something evil into the algorithm. But like, so Dr. Frankenstein didn't set out to create a monster, but when he realized it was a monster, he had to do something about it. They know that they've created a monster, and they're saying, it's not on us. Free speech or something. I don't know. I'm not going to do anything. Yes, I've created something evil, but it doesn't bother me. And while it doesn't bother me, and while I'm just going to stand back, I'm raking in money based on my inaction for dealing with what I created. It's at best case scenario, it is amoral, and they are profiting off of something horrendous continuing.
Wait, profiting off of something that's amoral? I believe that you just described all corporations. They don't have any morality.
Yeah, but I would argue that because they're far bigger than most corporations, because they reach more people, it's even worse when they do it.
No, I understand that. But guys, what I'm afraid of is if you take that argument to its logical extreme, all you're going to do is go back to the establishment media. So you're going to put in so many guardrails that we're going to go back to the era of acceptable thought.
That is the danger. That is absolutely the danger, without question. Even I found myself, because I think you've got to rein this beast in. But even I started thinking, as Cenk has just pointed out, which is, okay, you start reining it in, where are you going to end up? and he makes an effective argument, they really need to do something there, Cenk. They have so much money. It seems as though it's not a lot to ask for some of those resources to be directed to reining in some of this, yeah, this toxic beast.
Well, maybe he gets into that in the next clip. Let's go to the portion where it focuses a little bit more on Facebook.
Zuckerberg tried to portray this whole issue as choices around free expression. That is ludicrous. This is not about limiting anyone's free speech. This is about giving people, including some of the most reprehensible people on Earth, the biggest platform in history to reach a third of the planet. Freedom of speech is not freedom of reach. Mark Zuckerberg seemed to equate regulation of companies like his to the actions of the most repressive societies. Incredible. This from one of the six people who decide what information so much of the world sees. Zuckerberg at Facebook, Sundar Pichai at Google, at its parent company, Alphabet, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, Brin's ex-sister-in-law, Susan Wojcicki at YouTube, and Jack Dorsey at Twitter. The Silicon Six. All billionaires, all Americans, who care more about boosting their share price than about protecting democracy. This is ideological imperialism. Six unelected individuals in Silicon Valley imposing their vision on the rest of the world, unaccountable to any government and acting like they're above the reach of law. It's like we're living in the Roman Empire and Mark Zuckerberg is Caesar. At least that would explain his haircut.
Yeah, that's a good line. So look, now he is laying out the problem. We might disagree on exactly how you should deal with it, but I think that most of us can agree that what they're currently doing is, I think it's fair to say, self-serving, and it's minimal. They're not doing much. I mean, where do you draw the line? I don't know, you've got billions of dollars. Maybe you could experiment a little bit. I would start at the very least by actually enforcing the rules that you have, which they don't do, or they change them when they're called out. This whole thing about allowing politicians to lie in ads, originally they had restrictions on that. And when people, including Judd Legum, showed that no, you're allowing Trump to lie over and over, they just got rid of the standards altogether. They say that you can't have sort of bot networks of Facebook pages promoting all of your content automatically. Daily Wire is doing that right now. They've got 14 massive pages with huge reach that the only content they put out is spreading the content of Daily Wire. It's explicitly against the rules as they stand right now. That was pointed out to them. They don't do anything because they don't want to offend the right wing. And then they lie about it. Zuckerberg, it was revealed, had a meeting last month with Donald Trump. I believe Peter Thiel, but definitely Donald Trump. And that's during this time where we're talking about his approach to Trump's advertising. Did he reveal that? That he was having secretive meetings with Donald Trump? No. Yeah. And he's profiting mightily while this is going on.
So people are going to misinterpret me saying, on the other hand, as me not agreeing with Sacha Baron Cohen. That's not the case. Now, normally on talk shows, and I do this very, very often, strong opinions. I'm positive about certain things, right? On this one, I'm really not sure. I think it's a very difficult problem. But I will say, I think that the larger issues, I think we're kind of missing, or we've got the wrong focus. The larger issues that are that corporations have now become the new nation state. So they're unaccountable to almost all the governments. They've captured the United States government completely through campaign donations, and they've captured many other governments. So that's why they're all unaccountable. We're just seeing the ramifications of Facebook and Google, etc., more because they're more part of our lives. We almost never interact with ExxonMobil. We almost never interact with the other giant companies that have taken control of our government. So, and we have no rules to rein in corporations. We only wrote one line of code for them, maximize profit. Mm-hmm. That's the core of the problem. It's just that when you take it into social media, it creates these other ailments that we can see with our own eyes. So I wish we would go and tackle that problem, because I think it would fix a lot of other issues first, and then that would also affect Facebook, Google, etc. And I also don't want to get into the demonization. And here again, I'll admit a bias. I at least know Susan from YouTube. Look, it's my best guess, and you can say, hey, you know her, so you're full of crap or whatever it is, right? Perfectly lovely person. There's no crazy hidden agenda of like, I will control the world, and I'll drive people to the you know, to the wrong places for wrong purposes. No, look, Facebook appears on the surface to be incredibly right wing, right? But I don't see that at the other companies. It's much harder to discern.
Twitter's got some problems with.
Yeah, I hear you. It's just harder to discern. We don't really know, right? And so, and I've never sensed that in my interactions. Again, I might be biased because we have a relationship. On the other hand, if I thought there was a bias, I'd be the first guy yelling about it, right? And you all know that. And so, I think, and they're in a very difficult spot. So the minute, and so that leads to the second larger problem, which is we have an imbalance in this country where one party lies all the time. But even the mainstream media, I mean, you want to criticize Facebook and Google, I hear you, it's a really fair debate. But how about the New York Times and Washington Post that takes Republican lies and equates them to things that are true? I can't tell, Republicans say this, Democrats say that. Now on Trump, they've been better. But during the Iraq war, during the Bush era, during the enhanced interrogations, during Mitch McConnell's reign throughout all this time, I can't tell who's doing the obstruction, it's 50-50, I'm neutral, right? Well, then you equated lies to the truth, and that is terribly damaging. So there are larger issues at hand that I think are bigger cancers. That doesn't mean they don't affect Facebook and Google, they do. And it doesn't mean that those companies aren't also contributing in other ways to the problems. But I don't think the answer is simple. And I think if we just say, like, okay, rein people in, who and how, it's really hard. Yeah. That's my sense of it.
No, even discerning the lies is hard because most of the lies, or certainly a bulk of the lies, exist in a gray area. So it is hard. I guess all I was saying before is, and I think all that Sacha Baron Cohen is saying, it sounds like John's saying a flavor of it as well, is devote some resources to it and try to solve that riddle. It is going to be hard, and you may make a mistake, but try to solve it. The other thing I would say is, Cenk is 100% right about something. We notice this, but the media mergers and the corporatocracy merger mania that occurred late 20th century and early this century, that has created a handful of beasts. So if you're going to tackle these guys, you also have to go after the other corporate beasts. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and last thing is, look, even if I disagree with parts of what Sacha Baron Cohen is saying, I deeply respect him for bringing up this really important issue that we should all have a national and even international conversation about and come to some sort of conclusion. Because right now, yes, there are things that go bump in the night, certainly on the internet, and we're all throwing our hands up going, I guess there's nothing that could be done about it. Maybe that is the answer, but maybe it's not. And we should all, you know, make a concerted effort to figure out what can be done.
Yeah, but definitely go watch the whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're gonna do one story really quick. Okay, the Bernie story. Okay,
that should be quick. 15 minutes and we're out.
Okay. No.
Okay. If you haven't been watching the Democratic primary polling, you might not have noticed yet, but you might soon that we've had a bit of a shifting in the order. We know that Joe Biden still at a comfortable first. For several months now, Elizabeth Warren's been in second, but here comes Bernie. On Friday, Sanders retook the second spot with an average of 19.3% compared to Warren's 18.5%. And if you wanna look at this over time, this is the Real Clear Politics polling average. There's lots of lines, it's very confusing. But on the right, you see Biden is in green, Bernie is in blue, Warren is in brown. And you have to go back to, it looks like September, for when there'd been a period of months of Sanders and Warren sort of neck and neck in the polling. Then she jumped up, narrowly catching Biden. And now Bernie has, after that couple of months, he has retaken second place.
So I see a couple of really clear trends there. And then I'll get to even better news for Bernie. Look, you could all see it with your own eyes. It's not just the Warren and Sanders trend. To be fair to Joe Biden, he's still shockingly high in the national polls.
Yep.
In fact, even as Bernie is now caught and passed Elizabeth Warren is in second place, Biden still has a 10.5-point lead on him. And now there's also a dichotomy that you really gotta focus on, which is, yeah, those are the national polls, but we don't vote nationally in the primaries. We vote state by state. And people do gain momentum when they win states. That's an indisputable fact of American politics. And right now, to be fair, Buttigieg is peaking in Iowa and New Hampshire. Those are the first two states. And in the last set of polls, he is pretty much a clear number one in Iowa and New Hampshire. So that is an amazing and fascinating development. So for all of Warren and Sanders consistently being in the top three, and you can see it in that line, you know, people are constantly talking about Klobuchar and Kamala Harris, et cetera, but the reality is those top three have been in the top three way above the others for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And if you watch cable news, you might not get that sense at all. I mean, there's Bernie's been dismissed 100 times over, and there's all this talk about a Klobuchar run. I don't know about all this talk, but there's all these establishment candidates that have gotten a lot of airtime that their polling did not merit.
Yeah.
So that's also clear. But what you can't see in that poll, that graph, because it's just a national poll, is Buttigieg's rise. He's now in purple, and you see a little bit of a rise in the national numbers, and also very important, he's clearly past Kamala Harris. She's on her way down, he's on his way up. And the other thing that's obvious is everybody else is done. I mean, they're not gonna all of a sudden jump and catch the top three. So
here comes Booker.
Well, I don't know about that. But so whether we agree or disagree with these different politicians, Biden is still a force to be reckoned with nationally and in places like South Carolina, where he has a huge lead. And now, by the way, another thing I was wrong about, I thought once Biden lost the lead, he'd never regain it. But he did, for a brief period, lose it to Warren, and he did regain it. In fact, in Nevada, Bernie took the lead, and Biden regained that lead. So this is a fascinating race, a completely unpredictable race. The establishment that thought Bernie was out was totally wrong. But to be fair, when I thought Biden would be a goner, he hasn't been. So I've been wrong about that. So it is amazing. Okay, now having said all that, the last poll out, Emerson, Bernie now tied for number one. Okay, so it's just one poll. What you just saw on the graph is a combination of polls, but Bernie now in the last one tied with Biden at 27. They're the two clear leaders nationally. And I'll add my anecdotal sense of it, and that has been at times right. Is that wherever I go in the country, it feels like there's a progressive surge for Bernie. So most noticeably, I talked about recently the California Democratic Convention. Mm-hmm. That convention, when I went 2 years ago, was about 25% progressive, 75% establishment. It was like, oh look, the progressives are here, right? Just 2 years later, wall to wall Bernie, wall to wall Bernie. So the closer we get to the election, the more it feels like progressives are coming back home to Bernie. So interesting development.
Yeah.
So it's fair to say, hey, be fair to Buttigieg, and don't underestimate him. He's doing really well in New Hampshire and Iowa, and that can give him a huge boost up. And he was smart strategically to focus on Iowa and to get that lead there. He spent all of his money on those two states. It's a smart thing to do. Unlike Rudy Giuliani back when he was running a long time ago, he's like, I'm gonna concentrate on, I gave him the Trump hands, on Florida, which was at the time like voted fifth. By the time they got to Florida, he was already gone. Okay, so Buttigieg has played his smart. Biden has shown resiliency. But at the end of the day, given these polls, it is true. Here comes Bernie. All right, Mark Thompson, everybody check out The Edge with Mark Thompson.
Thank
wonderful
you.
Podcast. Everybody check out Damage Report for members, and also on all the channels that we're on, Pluto, Roku, Zumo, YouTube TV. And if you want to be a member, tyt.com/join. We'll be back with another great hour when we come back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.